Okay, so we know for sure that one of our panelists is returning back, and another one, to my knowledge, is either finally down and out because of the Dayquil failing or swimming upstream as we all make like salmon at this con every hour on the hour. My name's Lillian Cohen-Moore. I'm your moderator. My day job, I'm a journalist. I subsidize that with my other day job, which is ghostwriting for corporate content blogs. I also do game design, and I've been gaming since I was a little girl. I grew up not knowing I was super privileged. I had two older sisters, and both of them gamed, which was awesome. And D&D came out when my parents were in high school, and they played too. So there was Mom, and then there was us, and now my niece is, you know, joining in yet another generation of gaming, which is awesome. And before any of us get too saucy in our language, is there anyone under the age of 17? Just making sure. I know you're lying. All right, sweet. So if I say fuck a lot, I won't be getting in trouble with most people's parents.
That's sir fuck a lot to you.
Yeah, I know.
All right, so I think we can move through introductions while we wait for more folks to come in slash come back.
Hi, I'm Ashley Cook. I'm the gaming and comics track lead here at Northwest Con.
Woo!
I mean, the panels have been good.
Yes.
I have written about comics and games for Giant Fire-Beating Robot. Of course, I've been playing games for a long time, since I was a kid, video games, and since I moved to Seattle, role-playing games. I'm from Tennessee. I've lived here about 5 years, and I didn't get into role-playing way back then. I think if I had known about it, I would have wanted to, but I didn't really know anyone that was into it. But as soon as I moved to Seattle, and I lived on Capitol Hill, and Gamma Ray Game Store, this awesome, queer, women-friendly game store, opened up and has, like, literally revolutionized the nerd scene in Seattle. And that is not an exaggeration. It's at least in downtown Capitol Hill. So that was a big impact on me getting into role-playing games.
I'm Ben Robbins. I run Story Games Seattle, which is a weekly open come and learn to play games and have fun. For the public, we get random new people walking in every week. We're actually weekly and then every other Saturday and every other Tuesday in different locations. And we actually play at Gamma Ray Games, is a newly opened Riga Lab. So we're kind of, they're a very good friend to us and to the community at large. I also am a game designer, and I wrote a game called Microscope, which will come up a little bit in the sense that it addresses the way people participate in games, which I think is part of this question that we're addressing today.
Oh, I forgot to mention another thing. I'm also part of a group called Queer Geeks, and I run a monthly ladies gaming night. And it's only on its like fourth or fifth month, but it's been amazing. So that's something else I do in the community.
So if you want to get plugged into local, you know, queer gaming culture, you should ask Ashley for, you know, time and places. Okay, so while we wait for Gwen to come back, who is also as fabulous as my other panelist, a couple of quick ground rules. You are more than free to record, take photos, live tweet, blog about it later. Not like we can stop you. If anyone in here is excessively rude or has any incredibly sexist or prejudicial language, which I'm not anticipating, but sometimes it happens, I'm going to tell you to let the door hit you where the dog should have bit you. So just
nice.
Letting you know, you could say, you know, one rude bon mot, and then you're going to go. So make it good if it happens. Gwen, one intro.
The timing is perfect. Perfect.
I was waiting out there for like 5 minutes for this timing. Right.
Excellent.
So we're on intros.
So we're introing.
Oh yeah, so
it's your turn.
We just finished ours.
I am Gwen, and I was hoping nobody noticed I went to the restroom. But I worked in the video game industry for about 8 years. I started with 2K Games back in 2004, 2005, and first game was actually a sports game. It was awful. I keep saying that, but it was a testosterone charged environment. They had only one woman, and she was a receptionist, and she hated it. And then I worked at Sony, but not Sony Games. It was a It was a developer for a Sony game, and it was Sports Champions, so it was kids' game.
After that, I came to Seattle to work at ArenaNet. We are now developing Guild Wars 2, and I've worked there for about 5 years now. So about the last 5 years, I've been, or no, sorry, about the last 4 years of that, I've been kind of doing that, identifying as a woman since my transition. So about half of my career, I worked as a woman.
Nice.
Okay. So how we're going to do this, we're going to go through, we're going to say some nice things about community and people that have made us feel welcome and tips that we have about how to make our communities more welcoming to women. And then we're going to talk about some of the totally negative bullshit some of us have been through. And then we'll go through and talk about a few things so no one feels like all hope is lost. And then we're going to open up to Q&A so you guys can have a chance to talk to us, ask questions, problem solve for you guys, or at least we can try for any questions that you guys might have for us. Cool? Good? Good. All right. Sweet. What's the most recent thing your gaming community has done to make you feel welcome and appreciated as a woman?
That's actually kind of tricky because I end up running the
community. And in best case, things that you've seen that have made women feel welcome.
Well, I would actually go back to Gamma Ray Games and the owner, Eric Logan, who, he is literally the reason that I got into role-playing games. I had always thought that GMing sounded awesome. I never really wanted to play. I kind of do now because I'm more into it. I'm like, oh, that would be fun. But I always wanted to design the game and run it. And I had the third edition books for a couple years. I just didn't do it. You know, I was a little intimidated, and it is male-dominated. But, I mean, I'll be honest, I wasn't too worried about that because I, especially considering where I come from, I've not experienced a lot of awfulness with men. I mean, I grew up with nerdy friends that were guys, but they were all pretty great. But it was still intimidating. And Eric very much encouraged me. Was like, you know, I can find you players that are at your level of experience that would be good players for a new GM. And he's just constantly encouraging of women and gays in our community. If anyone ever, and it happens even on Capitol Hill in Seattle, it happens. Someone walks into the game store and makes a homophobic comment. He says, you know, we don't do that here. I mean, he's on it. You know, he's like, we don't do that here. I'm going to ask you to leave if you don't. You have to cut that out. And he is just nonstop like that all the time. So, yeah.
If I may ask a quick question, what's GM?
Game master, like a dungeon master for Dungeons and Dragons. The person that runs the game. So it's like you're basically designing a story and running other players through the game. So it's a lot of work and it's intimidating. And usually when you're getting into these games for the first time, you start as a player because it's easier to learn the rules. Yeah. So I kind of dove in head first and I just said, I'll design the story and my players can help me learn the rules. It worked out pretty well.
So Ben, what are things you've seen recently about encouraging women?
I'm on the side of trying to do that. When I'm running Story Games Seattle, one of our entire agenda, you might say, would be to get people to feel comfortable playing and participating and coming and wanting everyone to feel welcome. The only thing that will get you excluded is your own behavior. If you're a jerk, you're out. That's it. Anything else, you're welcome. And it's. Like, I have been told over the years that it's a very welcoming environment to everybody, and I've kind of in my head tried to decipher what it is we're doing exactly that's working, what's making people feel welcome and making people, we have women, we have men, we have everybody. But one of the things that we do, I guess you could say, is it's two things really. One is we kind of raise people up. We want everybody to participate we want them to participate, we want them to contribute. We move pretty quickly towards inviting people to help us, which in our game community means they're going to be a facilitator, they're going to be someone who helps teach other people games. So we've had people come, women who are there who are now kind of like constant facilitators of ours, who are constantly teaching new people games. When they first arrived, when they first started coming, they had no confidence in doing that, they had no even really desire to do it. And then after a couple of times being there and sussing it out, some night we're short for facilitators night. Give them the piteous begging look, like, come on, we need your help. You know, you're it. We need you to be the person who's going to help other people in the game. So I think that level of bringing them in and giving them the authority to help make this community be what it is has a pretty strong effect. And the other thing we do is that we, from the very beginning, I've very actively I have a secret agenda. This isn't a secret I tell everybody. about what games we play. We only play the kind of games that allow everyone at the table to have strong and equal contribution. So there's some games we just do not play, which are awesomely good games. Like most games that have a GM, we just do not play at all. Because if you think about it, if you're walking into an environment, you're a woman, you game with other people, or any person, you know, you walk into this environment and one person is telling you what's going on and you're kind of beholden to their authority, that's kind of an awkwardly weird social situation. So we just nip that in the bud. We just only play games where everyone at the table is on the same footing. And so that, by removing that kind of thing that we don't even see, we're like, oh, it's a GM game, big deal, why would that be weird? But then someone is sitting quietly listening to someone else for hours on end. Instead, we're like, nope, you know, you're in, you've got to talk, you're a participant. We kind of hot seat people and say, like, no, we want you we want to hear what you have to say. We make people talk, I guess you could say. And we show that that's what we want, that's what we're interested in hearing. We want to hear what people have to contribute. And people hate it. And then they love it. And then once they realize we're not kidding, we really do want them to contribute. And they suddenly, you see these people kind of realize their own worth and realize that yeah, we're totally fair about this. And then they are awesome. And then I make them organizers. And then I have them, like Caroline, I make them run their own day. I say, hey Caroline, how's Saturday going? Tell me how that's going great. And she's like, ah, curse you, Ben Robbins, for tricking me into running Saturdays. And I'm like, ah, I get the day off. That's my whole agenda right now.
So Gwen, what's something positive you've seen recently where a community was really doing a good job about welcoming women?
Well, I don't have much to say. Two things in particular. I'm glad there's a narrative going on right now. Even if some of it is negative, it's better than not having a narrative at all. Whereas in the past, this tends to be completely invisible and just is assumed as a default as something natural. But now, you know, now certainly with the hostile narrative, there's this also counter-positive narrative. It's certainly a narrative that's ongoing and engaging, and you know, I encourage all of us to kind of participate in this narrative. But the fact that it's happening kind of signifies that, you know, there's another resurgence in feminism. Yeah. And resurgence in feminism that I am tempted to call it fourth wave. And I'm not alone in this, but it's not official yet. So it's kind of branching off of the same idea of intersectionality from third wave feminism. But the fourth wave is not in so much the difference in ideology, but the way it's communicated with the rise of internet, blogging, video logging, and internet and video games. It's reaching masses in a different way. And I like that video games especially is also part of that narrative and part of what's bringing the new resurgence of feminism. And you know, feminism isn't just about women. Feminism is about a mindset of justice for gender equality in general. And you know, even though the term feminism is deceiving, but that's what it's about. The second thing I wanted to mention is just really briefly is very recently I saw a couple of people hacking the games to change the characters.
Yes.
And you know, having Daisy save the Jumpman in Donkey Kong.
Yes.
And Pauline save a Jumpman from Donkey Kong, and Zelda playing in a game called Zelda.
Go figure. You
know, which I thought is the most genius innovation I've ever seen.
Yeah.
To Mickey, tell folks about yourself. Tell us something you've seen recently where, you know, the gaming community has, you know, done something badass to welcome women. Also, they don't care if we swear.
Yes, okay.
Do we need to keep it PG for ladies?
We asked that before.
I'm the parent, you're good.
Okay. Good.
I apologize for being late. Somehow my sound got turned off on my phone, so I didn't hear my alarm. Aww. I apologize. My name is Mickey Schultz. I run a blog called geekgirlsrule.net. It's pretty much geek culture from a feminist perspective. And I'm also writing a hack of Monster Hearts that is going to is in playtest right now, and we're hopefully going to kickstart it soon. Baddest thing that the gaming community has done.
Even if it's just like a little thing, like you saw like one guy do something totally awesome, or women, or whatever. Humans, we're being good humans
being
to
good
women.
Humans. God, I've been every other panel's been so cynical this weekend.
That's the next step.
Okay, so the easy part. Honestly, I have to say that I think the Seattle indie gaming community as a whole is incredibly welcoming to women, and have been very supportive. I spent years going to like Dragonfly and stuff, and I would frequently be one of like six women for ages. And granted, the indie gaming community conventions like GoPlay Northwest are still not entirely gender parity, but there's a lot more women there.
Yeah.
And there's more women now at Dragonflight. But I think GoPlay has far more women. So, and they make a point of trying to be inclusive to women and more sensitive.
So. Sweet. All right, so now we get to talk about bullshit. It's going to be great. So the gaming community, we have a lot of face-to-face stuff, especially like in Seattle. We're a very gifted city where we get to see each other a lot and play games, and it's fucking awesome. But there's also a lot of toxicity that we're dealing with constantly in the online part of our gaming communities. And I want to go down the line and talk about toxic things that we have seen in our gaming communities.
As far as seeing stuff in the community, like I don't personally experience a lot of that kind of stuff myself, so I don't know if I have like a personal anecdote. I think I must be just pretty lucky in that regard. I mean, I'm very honest in the way I represent myself. I don't pretend to be more of a nerd than I am. I'm pretty open about my. I fly my geek flag. I'm not ashamed. But as far as just witnessing stuff in the community, I'm gonna steal your. At Emerald City. The awesome game store, and the same guy owns the lounge where they play the story games. He had a booth at Emerald City. There's a woman that works for him named Anna. She's a big War Machine nerd. And that is a geek community that is very few women in it, less than even like role-playing games and other communities. But that's a side note. So she faces a lot of this crap. But so she's at Emerald City. She's at the booth to sell like role-playing games and stuff. So these two guys come up. And the one guy is like, hey, do you know this thing about like Shadowrun or something? Do you know about this obscure question, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, no, you know, I haven't played Shadowrun in like 5 years. I don't know that one. So he asked her, he's like, oh, you know, what about this game? Do you know anything about this particular role? And she's like, no, I actually haven't played that game. And he just keeps going down the line, that's asking really.
He's giving the answers to
that, right? Yeah, well, yeah, 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 yeah. Then he gives, sorry, I should have let you tell the story. He's like giving her the answers. He's like, oh, it's this. And then he'll ask her another like question, and she's getting kind of confused. And then his friend is with him. He's like, dude, what are you doing? Are you testing her? And he's like, yeah, man. If she's gonna roll with the big dogs, she's gonna know her stuff. And then they just left. And Anna is not a shy girl. She was just like, it was all she could do to not like punch this guy. But for the rest of the day, and it is her reaction is humorous. For the rest of the day, we could just hear her regaling our friends with this story. It was like, I manage this goddamn game store. We're like playing our story games and being all happy and inclusive, and then from across the room we hear, I manage this goddamn.
Yeah.
So that was really lame, but a great example of like how awesome Eric is. Like he shows up and he's of course he's backing her up. He's like, if that guy comes back, like we'll blah blah blah, we'll show him, And we were all very supportive of Anna. We were all like, oh, if that guy comes back, we'll all start doing the slow claps. Oh, it's one of the big dogs. He's here. But yes. So it was kind of lame.
I'm continuously amazed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because most of us don't have money to deal with the assault charge.
Yeah.
So Ben, so in our online spaces, what are some of the toxic things?
I avoid the online spaces. I there's too much. The whole nature of the online world to me just leads to a lot of weirdness. I did personally enjoy walking around all day saying to Anna, well, if you want to roll with big dogs, it was great fun.
I'm going to make her a t-shirt of a dog rolling some dice.
So good. I deal with total strangers walking in every single week, and you never know what you're going to get, and not everyone's awesome. Not everybody, and even the people, here's the kind of sad bit. Even people who are potentially awesome but lack the socialization skills,
yeah.
Will come in, and we are really lucky. We get a really awesome just grab bag of people, fantastic grab bag, but not every time. We've gotten some pretty exceptional cases that have made people uncomfortable. And there's like this kind of like intervention checklist of, okay, now how quickly am I going to have to nip this in the bud? How quickly, you know, are they being awkward or are they being offensive? You know, what level? Are people, is their lack of social skills cross the line of making people not have a good time? It's like this complicated calculus you go through like in 5 seconds. Like, are they just, and here's the thing, these people are new to, they're around a bunch of strangers, they're being expected to participate creatively. They're nervous, they're really nervous, and they say stupid things. They just blurt out weird things. And so there's this kind of like, okay, you've never been here before, I get it, you're nervous. So there's a little bit of like, okay, we'll cut you some slack. But I'm also looking at the room and seeing who else is there. Like, if this one person is being a bad apple and is scaring away three other perfectly wonderful people who just are like, oh, that's how things are, that's perfectly unacceptable. But a perfectly a good story. We're being recorded for the internet, so I'll change all the names. When you go to an event with strangers, it is considered inappropriate to pile your condoms on the table in front of the other gamers. That might be considered a faux pas. Even if you're disorganizing, like, I'll just, you know, I got them there just in case. Because, you know, I like the game safe. inappropriate. Not something, that's my tip. That's my tip to you.
Condoms?
I didn't look that closely. I looked away. I could see that they were those. There was some intervention involved with that. And that wasn't even like, that person's not trying to be offensive. You know what I mean?
I've never heard of them.
Socially awkward, and you're like, well, unfortunately, now your social awkwardness has become a problem for other people, so sorry, we'll talk to you later. So, mm-hmm. That was a winner.
Just organizing.
It's sorting into the 18 categories? What?
You track these. The fourth thing. I'm like, well, I feel bad. Like, condoms are smart. We salute condoms, but yeah.
In certain contexts, they're inappropriate.
Yeah.
So, Gwen, talk to things that you've seen online or offline in the community.
Online is almost a given. I tell my friends I surf the internet with a box bag, you know, because it's like, every article, like, I'm always hesitant to scroll down the comments.
Oh, like, oh, comments.
Or, like, article comments.
This is why Ben doesn't
comment. Same 20 guys on every website.
The bottom half of the internet.
Yeah, YouTube comments, like, Kotaku, like, comments, I don't even want to go there. And then, you know, like, you play online games, the chat rooms, or the chat box, it's just like, hide. Yeah, I keep trying to run away from it. Sometimes I stand up for it, but like I stand up to it and I try to call it out. But it takes a lot of energy. It does. And then, you know, even when you try, we don't do it just to change the person or to like call out something on the internet. Sometimes I do it just so other people in the web space can see it.
That's a great
point. They
may
be the quiet ones who are, you know, like, they're just playing a game. They see all of this, like, awful text going on, and no one's calling it out. And so they're just going to think, well, this is somehow acceptable, I suppose, in this space. And when someone calls it out, even if they're the underdog, mm-hmm. you show to the other person, you know, mm-hmm. you're not alone.
That's a really good point, because I think that when people, when smart, you know, inclusive people see that kind of stuff, we don't do anything because we think, oh, you know, that's so lame. But like, I don't respond to that stuff, but that would, you know, maybe I should, maybe just so other people can see that there is a positive response out there.
It does take a lot of energy, but you know, sometimes I think about it not from, you know, how much it taxes me, but how much it benefits others. And so, you know, when I do have the energy and time and energy, I'm like, let's go.
Sensation of holding back the tide online sometimes.
Yeah,
so bad. I find part of it depends on how hostile I'm feeling. Because, you know, oh, hey, look, someone's really asking for it.
So, like, the game I developed, Guild Wars 2, I sometimes play it, and we have a little icon on our head that shows that I'm a developer. And, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, thanks for the great game. But a lot of the time it's like, oh, you know, this, you know, like, why did you make this green? Like, I made that thing. Like, I made it. Like, 35 artists here. Like, I'm just 1/35th of all the things you see. And they're like, oh, well, that's so gay. And I'm like, wait.
What?
What do you mean, you know? Like, does that color, in, you know, evoke, you know, certain sexuality to you? To really, you know, dive it down in there and try to break it down so, like, you know, they see it as ridiculous. And, but, like, I refuse to, like, just give in. And,
yeah.
And you know, like, and that's, like, in a public chat where, like, 50, 100 other people could see it. And I don't care. I want them to see it, you know. Outside of cyberspace, I'm actually more reclusive. I'm just like, you know, outside of cyberspace, I am less confronting because of, you know, physical harm is a real danger. And so I tend to be more wary of that. So I tend to avoid situations like that. Well, there, you know, there are certainly environments where I find myself hanging out with a bunch of gamers. You know, even if we're not actively playing game, you know, they would, you know, like, engage in, like, fat phobia, ableism, and all of these conversations, and that really shuts me down. I can't really cite any specific examples, but
yeah.
It does happen.
Oh, there are so many. I've been running Geek Girls Roll for, like, 7 or 8 years now, and let's do a quick highlight. I had the girl who emailed me because the guys in her vampire group kept insisting that her character get raped because it was historically accurate. I spoke up on the Penny Arcade Dick Wolf debacle and got David's death and rape threats for 1.5 years. Every time I mention D&D, someone tells me to get back in the kitchen and make them a sandwich.
Taking a brief pause, is there anyone here that is not familiar with the Dick Wolves controversy?
I'm not.
Okay.
All right, we have a few.
Synopsis.
Can you take it, McKay?
Okay. So, Penny Arcade, who primarily concerned themselves with video games, did a webcomic, called The Sixth Slave. And what it was, is it was a slam on video game morality, where you have the quest to rescue so many slaves, and then you can't rescue anymore in most games.
And why would you want to?
Yeah, like World of Warcraft. You rescue your sixth slave, your fifth slave, you're done. So it's called The Sixth Slave, so the slave goes up to the hero, and he's like, sir, please, rescue, save me. They wake us with beatings, and then at night we are raped to sleep by dick wolves. And the hero goes, look, kid, don't make this awkward. I cannot speak for all women or all rape survivors everywhere. I was not offended by this, because it was definitely slamming video game morality.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't believe that rape was the punchline. I actually thought it was a kind of a funny comic, because, yeah, it's completely ridiculous. But the apology comic the next day was full of straw manning and crap. And basically they're like, you know, our comic made you rape, then you stop that. And I'm like, you know, that's not what anyone said, assholes. And so I wrote a thing, and I'm like, guys, you know, I was on your side of the first comic, but this apology sucked. It's not an apology, and you need to apologize for this apology. Or better yet, just shut the hell up and never speak of this again.
Mm-hmm.
And for 1.5 years, for about 1 year, I got death and rape threats. For the first few months, they were constant, to the point where I had my husband read my comment section, because I just couldn't take it. Then Kirby Crackle stepped down from PAX East as a speaker the next year. And it started it all up again, because one of the things that had happened was the one who's the artist, and I can't keep them straight. I always
Mike.
Say the wrong name. Mike, thank you. Had drawn designed a Dick Wolves T-shirt, and so a whole bunch of guys were like, "Yeah, we're gonna go to PAX and we're gonna do a Dick Wolves flash mob." Apparently, like 4 people did it. I mean, like 6 people showed up with their Dick Wolves shirts, because otherwise they're like, hey, wait a minute, I'm going to be out in public saying I support rape if I wear this. I don't know if that's a good idea. And so, yeah, and it came very close to making me stop blogging, because it was consistent enough that I would open my email and there would be, you need to be raped to death, you fat ugly whore. Constantly. And I was finally, I instituted what I referred to as my draconian moderation policy, which is if you engage in hate speech or your argument consists solely of nuh-uh, I will ban you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, though, because once you state that, most of the trolls go away.
Yeah.
Because what they want is they want people to see.
Mm-hmm.
They want people to see how clever they are. And
certain values of clever.
For certain values of clever, meaning about as clever as you know, a stuffed iguana.
Yes.
But, and I love Fat Uglier Slutty. I met her at GeekCon this year. She's amazing. But, it was this horrible thing, and they just doubled down on it, and the best thing they could have done was just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't, and they doubled down on it, and they were really horrible. Now, that said, the Penny
when
Arcade...
When you say they, do you mean the...
I mean the two founders, Gabe and Tycho,
Mike and Jerry.
Jerry, thank you. They have some awesome people working for them. The people who do the little animated cartoon shorts, amazing. Some of their bloggers are incredible. In fact, one of their bloggers just wrote about female representation in video games and how it needs to get better. And it was an amazing blog entry. But the two guys at the top, I don't think they're ready for the kind of leadership role that was thrust upon them.
Could I actually provide a different perspective on that whole controversy?
Could I ask that we talk about gaming communities?
Yes.
Women?
Okay. Yes. But I would encourage you guys,
if
you guys aren't familiar with that, I would encourage you to look into the facts and look into everything about it before forming an opinion.
My blog, actually, if you go back, I have several entries about it, and it links to everything that I found at the time about it, including the original comics and their original responses.
So, circling back to gaming and community. Yes, I hear you, Ben. For communities that have recently thought, we could use, more women, gaming with our group, and maybe there's things that we could do to be less, weird for women to play with, what are ways that people can open up their, either just their gaming group, or their gaming nights, or, their citywide communities at large?
When I say our gaming community in this context, I mean, I guess, the Capitol Hill gaming community, the Seattle gaming community. I started doing the Ladies' Night, and it doesn't exclude men. It doesn't exclude anyone. It's a queer organization that I'm doing it through, but I made the wording very loose and open because I wanted, we don't need a queer women night and a straight women night. It's women gamers or women gamers, and I don't want to exclude men. I just wanted a place. I often hear this catch-22 problem of nerdy women that want to game with other women or want to find a community with other women or even game at all. They're like, I don't want to go because I don't know if there will be any other women there, and I feel weird if I'm the only woman in the room. And for me personally, while I don't feel weird if I'm the only woman in the room, I like having nerdy women friends, and I like being able to game with other women. And so I started doing this night just as a place. It's like magic. You call it Women's Night, and they show up.
You heard it here first. If you open up Women's Night and you put that in big bold letters, they will come.
And you're a reasonably nerdy community to start with.
So Ben, what are things people can do to open up their communities?
I think there's really two, or for us particularly, it's like there's two separate things happening. One is there's getting people to show up, and the other is getting them to return. Right, and they're entirely different things. Like, we have step two, I think our group has step two pretty much down. Like, when people show up by behaving like adults, we have protocols in place for, I should have mentioned before, lines and veils, if you're familiar with them, there's protocols that you can use in gaming to basically say, if something makes you uncomfortable, we will stop. And it's not an ad hoc thing like, oh, we'll go talk. It's like a flat out, there's a code word you use, it's the safe word, and boom, we stop immediately. And every single time we have a meetup, We give this little speech. We welcome everybody. We tell everybody this is an adult thing. We're here to all, not an adult thing, but a creative thing. We're going to participate. But there's one hard rule that we have.
Right.
And we say, for the love of God, if you ever feel uncomfortable about anything, use this. And we will never ask you why you did it. We will not make you explain. We will not have an interrogation. And we will never say no. We will immediately, boom, done, it's gone. And I have been veiled, is what we call it. But I have gotten people who use that on me who later on realized they had used it mistakenly or preemptively. Like, they were sorry. And I was like, doesn't matter. You felt uncomfortable.
Right.
Boom. That's, we misunderstood each other. Doesn't matter. That was the right thing to do. Now you realize you had a way to fix things in the moment. You didn't have to go back later on and go like, okay, well, that was awkward. You had a immediate, effectively, meta-ombudsman to allow you to change the situation in the moment. And just by telling people that, I feel that it really changes people's attitudes.
Yeah.
They don't have to suffer in silence. In fact, we really, really beg people not to. I think that's something that I really wish... We talked about this a little bit when we're talking about the GM thing, that a lot of times, because gaming groups rely on their GM to...
Gamers rely on their GM to set the protocol of what is appropriate. So a lot of groups don't have a language, and this goes back to like a lot of what you were talking about Thursday night. They don't have a discussion. They don't know how to talk about that. They do not know how to say I'm not comfortable with that. And I think most gaming groups, whether it's public, private, whatever, could strongly benefit from that, because that would then allow everybody to voice their discomfort.
So, if you don't mind, does that mean you don't play the game, that particular game, anymore ever, or do you just stop it for the day?
It totally, we would totally continue the game. The general case would be something like, in this scene, a guy runs up, and he grabs you by the hair and throws you on the ground. And that person might say, no, just, I want to veil it, no. And the line or veil, basically, they're saying, I don't want it in the game, or I don't want to look at it. And if they say, no, I don't want that to happen, because this makes me uncomfortable, I just go, fine, they don't. The guy walks up and grabs your wrist. You know, I just edit on the fly. Mm-hmm. If it was subject matter like, for example, like slavery, racism, kidnapping, you know, cruelty to animals, you never know what it's going to be. Not going to make someone comfortable.
Clowns.
That just leaves the whole game. And I don't care if we've been playing for 3 hours and our entire game has been about slavery, if suddenly someone says, like, I'm not comfortable with that, we're like, okay, we're cutting that out. We're doing it. And when you tell people that, it really changes people's sense of helplessness in the situation. Mm-hmm. Like
that,
so. Yeah. So moving to Gwen and Mickey quickly so we can open up to Q&A.
I'm sorry, you had to reiterate.
ways that the communities can make themselves more welcoming to women.
I think more than just the participants of video games, the developers themselves are also part of the equation. Yeah. I said this yesterday in a different panel, some of you may remember. You know, video game is part of the media, and what media is to culture is a strange relationship. You know, some tend to think like, oh, the people, the consumer dictate what the media is. Some people say the media dictate what the consumer buys. You know, it's not either or, it's both. You know, there's a symbiotic relationship between the consumer and the media. And, you know, what you produce, the consumer will eventually partake and become the developer themselves in the future. You know, culture and media have always kind of pushed each other back and forth. And so for, you know, to answer that question, I would think both, like, the participants have to engage in, you know, the efforts that developers do or make to make games more inclusive. Like, games like when, you know, Dragon Age and Mass Effect came out, like, that was a clear effort from the developer side of trying to make something more inclusive. You know, like, as a consumer, you can try partaking in that instead of be like, well, you know, I'm just going to go buy another Call of Duty. because when you participate in a franchise that is willing to take that risk, you know, it's kind of giving back. It's kind of giving back and saying thank you for considering that. You know, consumers, you know, need more respect like this. You know, and similarly, you know, like I would say the exact same thing to developers. You know, when consumers show that they're willing to buy this stuff, you need to take charge and develop more content like this for that. So I think, you know, throwing a wrench into this system of just perpetually feeding the the lowest common denominators of the industry, you're only going to continue to develop the lowest common denominator. When profit, you know, profit is always important in every industry, but when it's the only driving factor in the industry, you're pandering to the whims of a consumer. You know, if the consumers tomorrow want the most sexist, racist content, and all you care about is profit, then you're probably going to make that stuff for them. You know, you're just going to make, like, the most outrageous game. But, you know, like, in this whole rhetoric of consumerism, we never let profit supersede responsibility. Profit never supersedes responsibility. And responsible content is not dispensable when you're, you know, just thinking about what consumer wants. And so I think, to reiterate my answer, you know, to actively participate in efforts that try to expand on these, like, you know, women in content, in video games, you know, Portal, Mirror's Edge. There's like there's this trend now that's coming out, and we should all participate in that. So I don't know if the answer is.
Nikki?
I got two flippant answers and the one really trenchant answer, which is if you want women who feel more inclusive in your gaming communities, ask them. don't assume they're idiots. And the last one is, guys, when you see other guys being jerks, say something.
Speak up.
Because women are largely conditioned to be nice. And not, I mean, there's a wonderful blogger named Harriet who does a blog called Fugitivist who talks about the fact that women are conditioned our entire lives to say yes and be nice until suddenly we're not, which is that one condition is rape. Mm. You know, suddenly when it comes to sex, we're supposed to be able to say no when we're not allowed to the whole rest of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it, and also a lot of women and a lot of guys don't want to look like a jerk calling somebody out of being a jerk. But don't. Just do it. Just say,
yeah.
Hey, dude, that's not cool. You don't have to tell them exactly expressly what they said. You just go, dude, that's not cool.
Yeah, you don't have to be a jerk to tell someone that their behavior's not cool. It's you know, it's a conversation. You don't have to like knock someone down because they did something wrong. They might not realize what they said was hurtful. By telling them that, you're helping them.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
But yeah, just dude, that's not cool. And or one thing that somebody online suggested, and I can't remember who it was, for dealing with sexist or rape jokes. You will, if someone tries to tell you a sexist joke, and this actually works for racist jokes too, if don't say that's not funny, you look at them and go, I don't get it. And watch them try to explain why that joke's funny without telling you the punchline is women are stupid.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And you just say, I don't get it. And just let them look like either they'll stop and they'll apologize, or they'll look like an even bigger asshole.
And if I may suggest, even in all male environments, if somebody makes a sexist joke, whatever it is, like you said, speak up. Because hearing it from other men, I think, is what really, I don't know, knocks stuff into people's heads. And I hate that.
It's why I broke the all-girls rule on the Geek Girl Rule podcast, because I had two guys on to talk about why it's A, not hard not to rape people. And how not to be a nice guy TM.
Yeah,
because if they're not listening to the women. I mean, we're talking till we're blue in the face.
Sweet. All right. All right, it's 6:49.
Sorry.
We can take about one question, then if you want to waylay any of us in the hall, if we have time, we're more than happy to keep talking to you. I just don't want to be the asshole that keeps the other panel from, you know, actually getting in here on time. Is there a question here?
I'm willing to be the guy.
Sweet.
So, back when I started in the game industry, the whole discussion was all about, you know, is it worth it to not be actively exclusionary? It was about, you know, if we use gender neutral pronouns and if we have example players who are girls, will that drive the men away?
Right.
And will we all go bankrupt?
I swear to God. That was the debate.
I think
what do you call dude pearl clutching?
Yeah. Jock clutching.
Jewel clutching.
On level.
So, but I think it's important to recognize that we have come further from that
now.
Yeah. And I think part of what the benefit of that is that now we can talk about how do we draw in. And a lot of that has to do, I think, some with the story games. Just thinking about things like, you know, in your regular GM players thing, it's a very hierarchical, authoritarian,
exactly.
Sort of patriarch. I know that's a can of worms, but
exactly.
You know, a womanish play style might be more collaborative and more, you know, equal sense. And so if you have a game that mechanically allows you to do that, and a game that says, oh, we are all going to talk, and it's okay if you talk, is, you know, more drawing it. And a game that's...
We're going to ask you to talk. We're going to say,
well, and
talk.
And a game that, you know, sometimes the issues come up when I've tried to, you know, set up ladies' game nights is, you know, women don't have as much free time a lot of the time because, you know, you're taking...
Second job!
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, a game that doesn't have to require a zillion years of prep or, you know, memorize all the rules in these seven books. And, by the way, when you get to the table, you're going to be doing a lot of math. You know, I mean, there's just so many
things... Which can be time-intensive.
That, where it's stacked up to be what guys are socialized to like. And then to try to make a game that says, okay, well, you know, what are women socialized to like? And can we make a game that's satisfying for both men and women, but that is where the norm is more... And I'm wondering, you know, is that something that, you know, in story games, is that a conscious thing you're trying to do there?
Oh, hell yeah. It's extremely conscious. It's extraordinarily conscious. In fact, I get flack from the larger gaming community because they're like, well, you don't play X game. You don't play these kind of games. And I say, well, here's exactly why. We want games where there's it's a round table and the ground's level. And those are two code words for the situation.
I was snickering a little bit because I did run an all women's gaming group for about 5 years, and they're the most bloodthirsty, punchiest. One of them is in the back. Mathiest groups I've ever run for. They were totally grognards. They were total grognards.
Yeah, and Ben. I mean, story games, you get about 30 to 40% women all the time, don't you?
It's not that I track it.
Family never track it.
I track it and keep an eye on it. But you know what? But I say that doesn't matter. I try to remind myself, when men show up, I'm happy. When women show up, I'm happy. When they're awesome people, I'm happy. And then I say, oh, I wish there was two more women here. And then I go, nope, awesome people is what we want. Because frankly, if the people are awesome...
It'll be
everything
awful.
Else works, right?
And it is also a very queer-friendly group as well. I mean, it's not, like, Ben as an organizer doesn't... I think Ben is very colorblind and genderblind. He doesn't think about those things.
Not very smart, yeah.
But it is, it's a very welcoming thing, you know.
We're at
53.
Yeah, so. Nah, I'm going to be nice to the panel behind us.
Okay.
So, if we can leave you with but one lesson, don't be assholes to other people, and when you see people being assholes, tell them, hey, you're an asshole. Thank you very much for coming.